much of the time, throbbing in rhythm to the constant electrical pulse. He had chosen this site for his headquarters because he could commandeer the big display screen that had been erected on one side of the storehouse shelving. It had been placed there to help the occasional human operator to locate items stacked in inventory. Fuchs used its link to Cellini's main computer to study schematics of the city's water and air circulation systems. He was searching for a way into Humphrey's mansion. So far, his search had proved fruitless.
The man must be the biggest paranoid in the solar system, Fuchs muttered.
Or the greatest coward, said Armajagel, sitting on the walkway's metal grating beside him, her sturdy legs crossed, her back hunched like a small mountain.
Nodon and Sanja sat slightly farther away, their shaved skulls sheened with perspiration in the overly warm air. This close together, Fuchs could smell their rancid body odors. They have showers in their quarters, he knew. Perhaps they're worried about their water allotments. Fuchs himself washed infrequently and water tapped from one of the main pipes that ran overhead. No matter how careful he was, he always left puddles that drew teams of swiftly efficient maintenance robots, buzzing officiously. Fuchs feared that sooner or later, human maintenance workers would come up to determine what was causing the leaks.
Every possible access to his grotto is guarded by triply redundant security systems, Fuchs saw as he studied the schematics. Motion detectors, cameras, heat sensors.
Nodon pointed with a skinny finger. Even the electrical conduits are guarded. A mouse couldn't swim through those conduits, said Sanja.
The man is a great coward, Armajagel repeated. He has much fear in him.
He's got a lot to be afraid of, Fuchs thought. Then he added, but not unless we find a way into his mansion.
No matter how they studied the schematics, they could find no entry into Humphrey's domain, short of a brute force attack.
But there are only four of us, Fuchs reminded himself, and we have no weapons. Humphrey's must have a security force patrolling his home that's armed to the teeth.
Nodon shook his head unhappily.
There is no way that I can see.
Nor I, Armajagel agreed. Fuchs took in a deep, heavy breath, then exhaled slowly, wearily.
I can, he said.
The three of them turned questioning eyes to him.
One of you will have to change your job. Get a position with Cellini's maintenance departments.
Is that possible? Asked Armajagel.
It should be. Fuchs replied. You're all qualified technicians. You have identity dossiers from Astro Corporation.
I'll do it, said Nodon.
Good.
And after Nodon begins working for the maintenance department? Armajagel asked. Fuchs eyed her dispassionately. Of the three, she was the feistiest, the most likely to ask questions.
Is it because she's a woman? Fuchs wondered. I'll have to acquire an identification chip for myself so I can get down to Cellini's lowest level.
How can you get one?
I'll need the help, he admitted.
The three Asians looked at him questioningly.
I'll call Pancho. I'm sure she can get an identification tag for me. That will give me access to Humphrey's grotto.
He was grasping at a straw and he knew it. Even worse, when he called Pancho from one of the phones set along the walkways of the machinery spaces, he was told that Ms. Lane was away from her office and unavailable.
Where is she? Fuchs asked.
Ms. Lane is unavailable at present, the phone's synthesized voice answered. Please leave your name and someone will get back to you as soon as possible.
Fuchs had no intention of leaving his name. Can I reach her wherever she is?
Ms. Lane is unavailable at present, the computer replied cheerfully.
How long will she be gone?
That information is unknown, sir. Fuchs thought swiftly.
No sense trying to pry information out of a stupid machine, he thought.
Besides, he didn't want to stay on the phone long enough to draw the attention of Cellini's security monitors.
Tell her that Carl Manstein called, and he'll call again.
Feeling desperate, trapped, he punched the phone's off-key.
It wasn't easy to surprise Douglas Stavanger. No matter that he had been officially retired from any formal office for decades, he still kept himself informed on everything that happened in Cellini, and beyond to a considerable extent. He knew that his wife was pressing the news media chief for more coverage of the war raging out in the Belt. He knew that the corporations were pushing in the opposite direction to keep the story as hushed up as possible. The Starlight tragedy had forced some light into the situation, but both Astro and Humphrey Space Systems exerted every gram of their enormous power to move the media off the story as quickly as possible. But now, as he sat at the breakfast table with his wife, Stavanger was truly shocked by her revelation. "You're going to Ceres?" Edith smiled prettily over her teacup. "Nobody else wants to open up this story, Doug, so I'm going to do it." He fought down an impulse to shake his head. For several moments he said nothing, staring at his bowl of yogurt and honey, his thoughts spinning feverishly. Yet when he looked up at her again, all he could think to say was, "I don't like it, Edie." "I'm not sure that I like it myself, darling, but somebody's got to do it, and I don't see anyone else stepping up to the task. It's dangerous out there." Her smile widened. "Now who's going to harm the wife of Doug Stavanger? That would bring Cellini into the war, wouldn't it?" "Not automatically, no." "No?" She arched a brow at him. He conceded, "I imagine the corporations would fear Cellini's response." "If anyone harmed me," she went on quite seriously, "you'd see to it that Cellini came into the war on the other side, right? And that would throw the balance of power against the corporation that harmed me, wouldn't it?" He nodded reluctantly. "And that would decide the war, wouldn't it?" "It could. It would, and you know it. Everybody knows it, including Pancho Lane and Martin Humphreys." She took another sip of tea, then put the cup down with a tiny clink of china. "So I'll be perfectly safe out there."
"I still don't like it," he murmured.
She reached across the little table and grasped his hand. "But I've got to, Doug. You can see that, can't you? It's important. Not just to me, but to everybody involved. The whole solar system, for God's sake." Stavanger looked into his wife's earnest eyes and knew he couldn't stop her.
"I'll go with you then," he said.
"Oh, no. You've got to stay here."
"I don't think..."
"You're my protection, Doug. What happens if we both get killed out there? Who's going to lead Cellini?"
"The duly elected governing council."
"Oh, sure," she sneered. "Without you pulling their strings, they'll dither and shuffle and do nothing, and you know it."
"No, I don't know that."
She smiled again. "I need your protection, Doug. And I can only get it if you're here at Cellini, keeping things under control."
"You give me more credit than I deserve."
"And you're the youngest Eminence Grise in the solar system." He laughed. It was an old standing joke between them. "Besides," Edith went on, "if you come out to Ceres, all the attention will be on you. They'll fall all over themselves trying to show you that everything's all right. I'll never get a straight story out of anybody." He kept the argument going for nearly another half hour, but Stavanger knew that his wife would do what she wanted. And so would he. "Edith will go to Ceres," he realized, "and I'll stay here."
Nobuhiko was brimming with excitement when he called his father to tell him that Pancho Lane was walking into the Nairobi base on the moon. The elder Yamagata was in his cell in the monastery, a fairly sizable room whose stone walls were covered now with bookshelves and smart screens. The room was furnished sparsely, but Nobu noticed that his father had managed to get a big square mahogany desk for himself. Saito was sitting on his haunches on a tatami mat, however, directly under the big wall screen that displayed an intricate chart that Nobu guessed was the most recent performance of the Tokyo Stock Exchange. "She's going into the Nairobi base voluntarily?" Saito asked. "Yes," gushed Nobu. "I've ordered an interrogation team to get there immediately. The Africans can drug her and the team wring her dry and she'll never even know it.